because we got the alternative energy. Right. Nuclear free autonomy.
And welcome to the Radioactive Show, produced at the studios of 3CR Melbourne and heard nationally on the Community Radio Network.
Kia ora and welcome to the Radioactive Show. I'm your host, Yo, and today we bring this broadcast in commemoration of the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, in memory and in dedication to the global movement to abolish nuclear weapons. We're fortunate to bring recordings from the incredible ICANN event, The Fire Still Burns. We'll be sharing more of the audio in coming weeks, but for today, you'll hear from Scott Ludlam, writer, former Green Senator, and lifelong national and international campaigner for peace and climate justice, who was the MC of the evening. Isao Morimoto, second-generation Hibakusha and son of the late author-illustrator Yonko Morimoto, Isao will share personal reflections on his mother's life and survival. And finally, Jim Rommeld, director of ICANN Australia, leading national efforts to promote the UN Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons and challenge Australia's support for nuclear militarism. This is a kōrero that highlights the urgency and also the very possible task of disarmament. To people power and our collective will, here is ICANN's The Fire Still Burns.
Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Scott. I'm your MC. It's really wonderful that of all the places you could have chosen to be tonight, you're here with us. We've got a really special evening planned. I'd like to start with an acknowledgement that wherever we're dialing in from tonight, wherever across this great continent or indeed around the world we're on unceded Aboriginal land. We're on land that was taken by force. And to acknowledge and celebrate the continuation of the oldest living culture on Earth, including people who were harmed directly by the industry that we're going to confront and help abolish this evening. Tonight, we also acknowledge that it's 80 years since the first atomic bombs were dropped, two events 3 days apart in Japan that killed at least 200,000 people straight away and cast a shadow 80 years long that's now coming into its fourth generation of campaigners and people who have worked across all domains of life, culturally, politically, diplomatically, economically, to make sure that these events never occur again. And we've succeeded. And so tonight is a commemoration, but it's also in part a celebration that the commitment that our parents and grandparents made after the dropping of the atomic bombs, that this would never happen again, including by some of the speakers this evening, we've upheld it. We've upheld it. Some survival instinct, species-wide, has kept the finger off the trigger. And that's how we are even able to have this conversation. So we're here grounded in commemoration and in memory, but also in hope. We've got our eyes fixed very firmly on the present, even though we will be delving back into the past, because it's never far from our minds that even as we speak, Israel, with the assistance of the United States, of NATO, and shamefully, Australia, has dropped the equivalent of six Hiroshima-sized nuclear weapons on a captive population about half the size or smaller than half the size of metropolitan Sydney. And that might cause us to give up hope on the so-called international order that we rely on to abolish nuclear weapons. But it has to strengthen our faith in each other and in our collective power. People power brought an end to nuclear weapons testing around the world. People power has stopped uranium mines, it stopped nuclear waste dumps and power stations all over the world. And people power will bring about an end to the Gaza genocide, and it will ban nuclear weapons. That's what we're here for tonight. If you're skeptical now that there's anything that we can do, and if you're here for the fellowship and the company and the companionship and the commemoration, that's fine. But by the end of the evening, it's our collective ambition that you do believe, because this campaign has a sense of a win and of some optimism around it. We're pushing on an open door, perhaps for the first time in a while. So we're going to bring Australia onto the right side of the campaign to ban nuclear weapons. I want to just preemptively, we'll do this properly a bit later, but preemptively thank everyone from ICANN, the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, who brought us here, an organisation that started in Australia not that long ago and completely rebooted and re-energised international disarmament diplomacy. So by the end of the evening, if you're not already with us, we hope that you will be. We've got an incredible lineup of speakers, literal rock stars, some very interesting political voices from across the political spectrum, including some that might surprise you, and obviously speakers from ICANN, Jem Rommel, who's going to give us the lowdown on where the campaign's up to and exactly what we're doing right now to bring this campaign to a head. But first, we've got a very special guest from Japan, Isao Morimoto, who's the son of Junko Morimoto, who survived the atomic bomb attack in Hiroshima. In 1945, he was 13 years old. Isao was born in Osaka in the Kansai region of Japan, and he migrated to Australia in 1981. He's assisted with the production of Junko's children's picture books. One of them published, My Hiroshima, was first published in Australia in 1987. He studied at City Art Institute and he's graduated from AFTERS, the AFTRS. And he was the director or the director's assistant for Blood Oath and directed his own feature film, Ichigen-san, in Japan. It's also worth acknowledging that this is a campaign with two Nobel Peace Prizes under its belt. The first was won by ICANN, by the organization hosting us tonight in 2017. And the second by Nihon Hidankyo, which is the organization, the collective organization, raising the voices of the Hibakusha, of the atomic bomb survivors. So it's really an honor to welcome you this evening, Morimoto-san.
Hello. Hi. Yes, my name is Isao, and I'm the son of Junko Morimoto. And she was 13 years old when she survived the atomic bomb attack. That particular morning, she had a diarrhea, which was quite lucky. Because he didn't go to a school where all the students are ordered by military to clear some broken houses, make sure there's no fire spread at the time of further bombing. So 360 friends of hers actually died that day, and my mother survived. And she was very lucky. The her family, none of them are killed in the incident, but the experience was very shocking. And when I grew up, of course, I heard some stories, but when I went to the art school, I just asked her that I want to know exactly what happened at that moment of explosion, because we hear a lot of our stories about what people saw, what happened afterwards, and the long period of suffering, losing many of the family members and torment. But I didn't hear exactly what that moment was like. She told me that in that morning she was having a breakfast. Actually, she couldn't eat, so she was sitting in front of her sister, elder sister Teruko, and they heard a siren goes off for warning, followed by the bombers flying above their heads in a summer hot day, blue sky. She couldn't see it, but she could picture it because everybody knew the sound of bombers. Interestingly, bomber just went over the sky, and they're wondering why the only single sound there. And then suddenly everything exploded, and for her it was impact with huge sound and flash, and then she almost pretty much lost her consciousness. But she was thinking, I'm gonna die, because she believed the strike was right on her house only, because nobody could imagine one bomb can destroy an entire city. So she thought the bomb fell on her, their home. Now, she can't quite recall exactly how long she lost her consciousness. That's pretty natural, I guess, if you are out. But when she started to come back out from that, the thinking of being killed, and gradually surrounding start to have a lights and the dust, and first thing she remembered, she told me, was the screaming voices, including her own. So she was actually screaming from the moment of impact over the time she lost her consciousness. When she came back, she was still screaming. And her sister in front of her was screaming also. Her chopstick went through her cheek because of impact, the shock. And then she told me, I asked, just trying to remember exactly how she perceived that moment. And she said she actually heard screaming of entire city. She could hear lots of people everywhere was screaming at the same time. And it was very significant memory in her experience. She later wrote about it, but this is not some kind of speculation by the poetic kind of statement, because at that time I asked her, try to remember how she felt, how she remembered the sound and feel of it, temperature of it, and everything. And that's where she told me that's what she experienced. Now, that really freaked me out, because there are a lot of people killed instantaneously that day. And on top of that, many people survived later, but also their life destroyed quite a major way. People got sick many, many years afterwards. And all that cause was one moment, and everybody screamed. I believe this is not a sort of world that human should expect to have. And my mother always told me, only thing the Hibakusha wish, there are a lot of justification issue, the what to be told, what to be agreed, what to be recorded, but the only thing is the justice they seek. The justice is that people do understand that moment was the gate to the hell was opened. And everybody to say, we do not want to open that gate again. And everybody to plead and basically agree, we will not waste their tragedy, their sacrifices, and we'll never do it again. That is the single most important request from the people who survived or killed in that day, and the families believe. So my position is, I'm not very politically active person. Having said that, in a turning point, I always step up and try to do something, one thing to say, I don't want it. And this is a moment I'm doing my part. Everybody who might be participating in this webinar and listening to my story or other people's opinions and all that, it would be great if you take your own position and raise a hand and do something, one thing, to say, we don't want it. So that is my request. On behalf of my mother, I knew very well, and hope that everybody might understand the perspective from the Ground Zero from the Hiroshima. Thank you.
Thank you. So that was absolutely extraordinary. What a beautiful way to get us started. Really appreciated your words, those of your mothers, and just want to underline the significance and the importance of hearing this testimony firsthand from people who were there. There's nothing as significant or as important as that. For our second speaker, just for a complete change of pace and gear, I'm not actually going to introduce him. I'm going to ask Jem to roll the tape. We've got I believe this is the first time we've ever got a statement of its kind on a webinar like this for ICANN. Let's see if you can work out who it is.
Today, as we mark the 80th anniversary of the first use of nuclear weapons in Hiroshima, we remember all those who lost their lives, just like we remember all those who lost their lives with the second use of atomic weapons at Nagasaki. The Australian government shares their ambition for a world without nuclear weapons. We're taking practical steps to halt their spread, reduce the risk they will be used, and ultimately forge a path to their elimination. It is more than half a century since Australia's Whitlam Labor government signed the Treaty on Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons. We remain resolute and committed to working for a world without nuclear weapons.
All right, how's that? Let's let that one sink in. That's a statement directly from the Prime Minister of Australia, who's taken a little bit of time out of his busy schedule to address us and this issue directly. And I think we should take that as an invitation. We take him up on this offer. Prime Minister Albanese, from opposition, made some actually very important moves about embedding support for the nuclear ban treaty that our next couple of speakers are going to speak of in a little bit more detail into ALP policy from opposition. Then from government, on two different occasions, it's been reaffirmed as government policy, which is why I started the evening with a note of optimism that we actually have a real shot at this. And it's not every day that you get those kind of statements of support from our political leaders. Just check. Jem, who's been with ICANN from the beginning, take it away.
Thanks so much, Scott. And it is so wonderful to see you all here. Yes, it's a big audience for us. So I think people are feeling really moved and motivated at this point in time to take action. So that's awesome. I'm calling in from Darawal country in Wollongong tonight. And of course, we're gathering in remembrance and in dedication for the Hibakusha, the victims and the survivors of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, who've spent their lives warning us that nuclear weapons and humanity cannot coexist. But we remember also the victims and the survivors of the first nuclear explosion in New Mexico, the people sacrificed under the Trinity fallout. And we remember the vast areas of land and the uncountable number of people whose lives were poisoned by nuclear weapons testing, from Kazakhstan to China, the Marshall Islands, Algeria, Maui Nui, Montebello Islands, Emu Field, Maralinga. Nuclear weapons have brought nothing but devastation, long-lived contamination, illness, death, social isolation, and the insidious uncertainty that survivors live with. And as we're looking at these images from the past and remembering the horrors wrought by these weapons of mass destruction, we also turn our eyes to today's reality, the rubble of Gaza, the burnt, the wounded, the starving Palestinian people. And the genocide being perpetrated by Israel is part of the same pattern, the unchecked aggression of the nuclear-armed states acting with impunity. The people sacrificed for the sake of toxic political alliances, the disregard for international law, and the cold-blooded power of the weapons industry. But we don't accept this, and we will not look away. Nuclear weapons are at the very apex of human depravity. 80 years on from their invention, there are 12,000 of the things still hanging over our heads, threatening our existence every day, and they yield far more powerful and terrible than the bombs of 1945. Hiroshima and Nagasaki are not just about history, they're a warning. A single nuclear weapon on a major city today would kill hundreds of thousands of people in minutes. There's no emergency response, no hospital system in the aftermath of a nuclear bomb. Radioactive fallout crosses borders, infects the earth. Climate disruption from even a limited nuclear war could lead to global famine. The 9 nuclear-armed states are modernizing and spending billions on their arsenals. In 2024 alone, they spent more than $100 billion just in 1 year. The risk of nuclear war, whether by intent, accident, or miscalculation, is rising. If we don't get rid of them, they will be used. It could be in 30 years or 5, or it could be later tonight. Just a few days ago, President Trump was moving nuclear-armed submarines closer to Russia. Nuclear posturing is not a game. One day it will become real, and the well-rehearsed plans for nuclear weapons use will be executed. Australia's defence policy still clings to the outdated concept of extended nuclear deterrence, the idea of protection under the US nuclear arsenal. This is a reckless concept that undermines our security. And it's a theory that's been really successfully propagated by the nuclear-armed states to justify their ongoing possession of nuclear weapons. And it's the key barrier to disarmament. It's time to move on. Nuclear weapons are never a legitimate means of defence. And now AUKUS is increasingly unpopular, and that's for really good reason. It ties us closer to US nuclear war planning. It undermines our sovereignty, robs us of the funds that we desperately need to address urgent global problems, and it amplifies the drums of war. We don't want submarines fueled with weapons-grade, highly enriched uranium. We don't want nuclear weapons in Australia, on any platform, not on planes or submarines for any amount of time, not even visiting for 10 minutes. We have the right, we should have the right to reject this strategic ambiguity. We have the right to know if there are nuclear weapons here and to say no, no nuclear weapons on these sacred lands and waters that we call Australia. But there is a way forward. the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, which we've talked about a lot tonight, it's our best chance against our worst weapons. It bans nuclear weapons comprehensively, and it's broken the disarmament deadlock, and it's the first international treaty to do this. It possessing, developing, testing, threatening to use, using them, assisting with them, pretty much everything to do with nuclear weapons is illegal. So it's about getting rid of the weapons, and also it's about nuclear justice, seeking repair for the harm that they've done on nuclear test and use sites around the world, and that's in Articles 6 and 7 of the treaty. And it's intended to work like the other treaties that ban inhumane weapons. You ban the weapon, you stigmatize it, spur divestment, isolate the countries that possess them and put them out in the cold. Already 94 nations have signed, 73 are states parties, and there's more on the way. That's half the world already. And it's almost all of Australia's neighbours, Indonesia, the Philippines, Thailand, Fiji, New Zealand, almost all ASEAN and Pacific nations. And Australia is really critical in this. We could be the first nuclear endorsing country to sign on. And we'd be getting on the right side of history, but it's more than that. It's, we know that this would help pave the way for other countries also under pressure from the nuclear bullies not to sign on. This treaty could turn the ship around and catalyze a new era of disarmament. And Australia's signature would spark a global shift. So we're working to turn around the massive public and political support for this treaty into action. We want to see signature in this term of government. Three quarters of Labor's federal caucus have pledged their support. The ALP platform commits to signing and ratifying the treaty first in 2018, then in 2021 and 2023, reaffirmed while in government. And Anthony Albanese himself championed this policy. And when he introduced the motion in 2018 to the National Conference, he held ICAN's Nobel Peace Prize medal aloft. We got some opinion polling done on support for Australia to join the treaty, and we've released it today, and it says that 2/3 of the Australian public want our government to sign this treaty, and only 11% don't want to do that. So it's pretty obvious what path we should take. We also asked about support for whether it's acceptable to for nations to threaten each other with nuclear weapons. And unsurprisingly, about 78% of respondents said no, that's not acceptable, and only about 10% said it was. There's so much happening in the campaign right now. It's been a really big time, and it's amazing to see so much momentum, you know, at all levels of government and in the community. Just in the last couple of weeks, the Perth City Council endorsed the treaty, endorsing the ICAN Cities Appeal, and they're the 51st council to do so around the country. The last two before Perth were the West Arnhem Regional Council in the NT and Victor Harbour in South Australia. There were motions tabled in both the Federal House of Representatives and Senate in support of the treaty last week. And just this morning, a motion was passed in the New South Wales Parliament with good, strong language, recognising the treaty as a vital international instrument to achieve a world free of nuclear weapons. The Victorian Labor Party passed a strong motion at their conference last weekend, and we've got new federal and more state and territory MPs signing on to the ICAN parliamentary pledge. There are unions and councils and civil society nationwide getting really active, and I want to just call out a few because I'm sure there are many of you in the crowd and many that I'll miss as well, but there's been a great motion from the Independent Education Union, the Maritime Union of Australia, First Nations Rank and File, the New South Wales Teachers Federation, the Australian Services Union, Victorian Trades Hall Council. I hope some of you have seen our massive banner on the side of the building there that's up for a couple of weeks now. The Uniting Church, Australian Lawyers for Human Rights, the Medical Association for Prevention of War that birthed ICAN, Doctors for the Environment, and so many of you who have individually sent letters to the Prime Minister clamouring for Australia to join this bloody treaty already. So let's take this momentum forward. We've got many old and new friends here now, and I ask all of you to go away from this event with the nuclear victims and the survivors in your hearts and the fire in your belly. And I want you to do what you can, take Isao's message to do one thing or two things or three, send that letter to the Prime Minister and the Foreign Minister. You can find it on the front page of the ICAN Australia website. And if you've done that, that's wonderful. Take this to your MP federally, and especially if they're one of the new ones, and ask what they're doing to get this treaty on the agenda. You know, don't just indicate your support, but be active within the parliament, within their parties, to put this forward, because, you know, they need you hassling them to then hassle in turn within their parties. Take it to your local council, your union, your political branch if you're in one, your faith leaders, and keep the expectation high. Yes, this is difficult, but what we do changes the shape of what's possible, and it is feasible. This is something that can happen, and it will be incredibly impactful when it does. 80 years after Hiroshima, we want to heed the call of the Hibakusha, and we want to refuse to let another lifetime pass under the shadow of the mushroom cloud. The public is with us. We have the tools, we have a plan. There's no excuse for delay. Let's make this the term that Australia signs onto the ban treaty. Thank you.
Just fantastic, Jim. Thank you so much. And so this is the point where we hand it back to you.
Welcome back. You've been listening to The Radioactive Show with recordings from ICANN's The Fire Still Burns, leaving you with powerful and energising words from ICANN's Australian director, Jim Rommeld. Thank you, ICANN, for all the needed and hearty work you continue to do. Very inspiring. We look forward to sharing more of this kōrero, but for now, shout out to 3CR, the Nuclear Free Collective, and the Community Radio Network for making this broadcast possible. That's all for this week, whānau. Kia pai te wikini. Take care out there. Ka kite ana. Pēnau, pēnau,
pēnau. You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.